mystery and horror. The air itself is filled with monsters.
Children of the night, what music they make.
He's alive! He's alive!
Well, hello, all you monster fiends, and thank you for joining us for another deep dive Factoid Field episode exploring Hollywood's most famous monsters. I am your mistress of ceremonies, Sam, and I am joined, as always, by Dan from Bleeding Marvelous. Say hello, Dan.
Hiya.
Look at that. 2 weeks in a row now.
Well, I was going to speak some German and butcher that, or I was going to speak some French and butcher that. So I'd rather just stick with what I know.
Please do, because yeah. I'm sick of hearing German now. Or French. Can't quite tell which one it is. Or Italian.
All three.
Yeah, all of them. Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the Monsters Up North podcast. This week, we're by ourselves. It's just us. And we're back to a double feature of Suspiria.
I'm glad you said it. For some reason, I really struggle with it, and I don't know why. My brain can't put it together well enough, and I start saying something completely different. So. Well,
I can see it. I can't spell it.
Oh.
Fun. Right, I'll get the disclaimer out of the way with, and then we're going to crack open whatever it is that I've just watched. So, Everything discussed in today's episode is our opinions and our opinions alone. If you'd like to discuss anything from today's episode, please come and join us on our Facebook pages. Come and join us on the Nelly Up North Discord or comment section where we can have an open discussion. But what we won't have is anyone coming for us and telling us our opinions are wrong, because we can all agree to disagree in fandom. So let's keep it fun, keep it kind, and keep the toxic behaviour out of a nerdism.
Don't be a dick.
Don't do it. Just don't do it. Don't do it. It's so funny. I've been watching some old episodes because I've been pulling clips for TikTok. It took a long time for the don't be a dick to come into place.
I see. I was being reserved and grown and trying to be a professional.
Do you know when you just, I was just, when you're waiting for something and I'm like, hang on, where is it? Where's it gone? I ended up, I was looking for the clips this morning and I actually ended up watching in full our Pet Sematary episode. I still love that episode so much. I'm like, I can't wait to finish Dr. Sleep to now read Pet Sematary, even though we did that episode a year ago.
Yeah.
It is a year, because it was around this time. Because we did Friday the 13th, because it was on October 13th.
Do you know what? We've done over 60 episodes now, I think we're somewhere in that realm. We're either coming up to 60 or just past 60.
That's crazy.
And yeah, we've been going a long time. I mean, we do have our little Christmas breaks, because to be fair, we need to time down. Whatever that is, time off, you know, we just need a little bit, but we don't go away for long. No. We just need enough time for our brains to switch off, to be able to switch back on again. I need to reboot. I'm like a computer. Yeah. You need to turn me off and turn me back on again. Have you tried turning her off and turning her back on again?
You'd be surprised how much that does actually work. Well, today is Suspiria 2. I did see you dancing, by the way, while I was saying the disclaimer. I mean, it's quite fitting, given that this is a dance film. You wouldn't think it, but it is. There's a lot of that in the second one.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Suspiria is the 1977 Italian supernatural horror film directed by Dario Argento, who co-wrote the screenplay with Daria Nicolodi. Don't know if I'm saying that right. Partially based on Thomas de Quincey's 1845 essay, Suspiria de Profundis. Yeah. The 2018 remake was inspired by Argento's movie, directed by Luca Guadagnino. So sorry! From the screenplay by David, oh my goodness, Kaczynski.
What she said.
It doesn't sound right at all. You can run from it. You can hide from it. You can't escape from it. As Monsters Up North brings you Suspiria.
Suspiria.
Suspiria. You can run from it. You can hide from it. But you can't escape from it. If I can run and hide from it, then I clearly, surely I can escape from it.
That's got to be a Lost in Translation thing, hasn't it? It's got to be a Lost in Translation because that doesn't make any sense at all.
But that is the genuine tagline for the 1977 Suspiria, which I said at the beginning is directed, written, co-written by the great Dario Argento. Yeah.
I know what the Suspiria actually translates in Latin to the word size.
I feel like I had that written down somewhere.
But why? What?
It has nothing to do with
got to do with anything that we have just watched?
Maybe that's what you meant to feel at the end of it.
Especially the second one. Has its moments, the second one. I will fight for certain parts of that film, but not the majority of it.
There is one bit in it I will give it credit for, and we'll get to that when we get to the second one. But the first one, I started watching this a couple of years ago and I ended up having to turn it off because the music is too much.
Goblin.
The music was too much at the time. I don't know if my ears were just being far too sensitive.
No, that is something I noticed on this rewatch. The balance of the shift, and I know they do it on purpose for shock value or for taking you out of the whatever suspense, making you jump, whatever their reasons are behind it. For me, their talking was like this. So and then the music!
Yeah.
And it was like there was no balance. So it was putting me off the flow of the film. So.
Where did you watch it?
How did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched it on Prime. So at the beginning of the one on Prime, it has an explanation at the start to say that there was a that Suspiria was a destroyed movie. And there was a restoration team in Germany. I am so paraphrasing from what this thing said. Yeah. There was a restoration team in Germany who took it upon themselves to piece the film back together with what they had. They got the original team who did the Technicolor to wash over it again.
Yeah.
They really did a top-notch restoration on this film. There is actually bits of it that are missing still. I don't know what that made out, how that affected the plot and whatsoever, but they did say they tried to do it to the best that they could, that it flowed consistently, which I found quite interesting, that this was a destroyed film that's been brought back to life.
Yeah, it said it was printed by using one of the last three strip Technicolor machines, which was the same process that movies like Gone with the Wind and Wizard of Oz used to get the colours. But obviously you can see now when you watched the version on Amazon, that's been digitally restored because the colours, I imagine, are far more vibrant than they were by using the machines.
He loves his red.
He loves a lot of things that I don't understand as well.
I remember... Is it a palette thing with him? Does every movie that he has have to have a signature colour? Because Demons is blue.
Mm-hmm.
This is red. And that's the only two films I've seen of his. So
he's done a couple of movies because this whole Suspiria is part of a three trilogy, isn't it, of mothers. There's the mother thing. I don't know if I wrote the notes for that on this one or on my other one, but there was this thing where he likes to use graphic primary colours, but he also likes to use very, what was the word? I've gone blank on it, but geometrics. He likes geometric patterns.
That makes sense.
Like bright colours. And that's his two like art choices. He likes the Bauhaus movement. He likes everything to do with that as well, which makes everything a little bit more stylized, I suppose. So
that makes sense. So the films were part of Inferno, Mother of Tears. Inferno was 1980, Mother of Tears was 2007, and it is a trilogy all of the three mothers. Yeah. Okay. I didn't get that in Suspiria whatsoever.
I think you get it in the second one because it's a bit more you get more exposition in the second one.
Oh god, yeah. Yeah.
The whole thing, you know, whilst it goes off on its own thing, there is more exposition and you sort of understand it a bit better than the first one. The first one, you're not really sure what's going on 99% of the time until the last 20 minutes. I think you really sort of things start to really make sense as much as they can do. So
yeah, because there's a lot going on in this and it's really slow and there's not a lot of dialogue in it. So you are stuck in places for quite a long time without a lot being said. However, that is not to its detriment. I actually preferred that because it gave me a lot of time to actually think about things. In a nutshell, Susie Banyan is the main character, Susie Banyan, who goes to an elite dance studio in Germany.
Yes, in Berlin.
It's in Germany, yeah. And she arrives in a very torrential night to be turned away by God knows who, while another student is leaving frantically out of the building.
Yeah.
Susie goes, don't know where. There's a lot of this in this, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know where. Susie goes off somewhere, but we follow the friend who goes to another friend's house. And we have one of the greatest death scenes I've seen in a long, long time.
I mean, I have to be honest with you. This is where I actually did like that. If I'd have gone to see this in the cinema, I think people would have turned around and looked at me like I was gone out or something, because it was the bit where he was pushing her face into the window and she was full on window licking, like whole face
pushed up against it.
And I just couldn't stop laughing. I was like, that's not anyway. She just was making a stupid face. I mean, obviously the aim was to try and give the suspense thing that she was going to go through the window. But when you've got a woman who's doing this and she's all like,
it was a friend who got me. Yeah. Our friends, like, bearing in mind, okay, so set the scene. The girl is being followed by an entity she can't see.
Yes.
She's locked the door to her bedroom. Mm-hmm. And this entity manifests into a hand.
A hairy arm of Dario Argento.
Literally pulls her head out of the window. And this tirade of attacks happens. By the way, you don't ever see her leave the bedroom. She just automatically ends up on the roof.
Yeah, I thought I blinked and missed it. I couldn't work out what happened. I was like, how's she out there now?
But this is what this is my thought process, is that missing scenes, there's missing things, because she literally does just end up on the roof. All while that's going on, her friend is trying to get into the bedroom by frantically screaming and banging at the door. But then she doesn't just do it to that one. She goes to all of our neighbors who aren't home, by the way, and she does it to them too. It's the scream. She doesn't know what she's screaming for.
No. The whole of that scene where you just see the arm doing all the stabbing and the nonsense, that is Dario's arm and hand. I did think the bit that was quite clever was when they showed the fact that he'd cut her, like her sternum, and her beating heart was showing. And they showed the beating heart being stabbed and then the blood coming out. I thought that was clever because you're talking 1977, so they shot this in 1976 when this was shot. I mean, practical effects were in a good place. We're talking Star Wars was 77, so we're not talking you didn't have your ILMs and your Lucas.
No, no, but there was things project, starting to progress, wasn't there?
Yeah, yeah. People were being able to sort of find ways to make things work, and with it being a giallo movie, there is the whole suspense thing because of the black-gloved man, because that's the standard thing with the giallo movies. The giallo is actually Italian for yellow. So what it means is there was a range of paperback novels that went out in the 60s, and they were called giallo novels because they were all yellow.
Okay.
They were well-known for their horror, thriller, and erotic elements. They were like pulp novels, so you get stylized murders. There'd always be a black-gloved killer somewhere in one of them.
Oh.
Or you'd be having like amateur sleuths trying to find out how they solved the crime. And so to see Dario's arm with the black glove on was what sort of kicked off the whole fact that it was a giallo film. But him and Lucci, I've gone blank on the other guy. I can see his face. He did Zombie. Yeah, they are famous for doing the giallo movies in Italy. But that scene I thought was very, very clever because it was so badly acted. And then you saw that bit and I was like, oh, it snapped me out of the laughing because I was like, oh, that was clever.
What snapped me out was just after that when she hung. It's the way she fell from the roof and the kind of noose grabbed her neck. It was like magic. Like she literally just, she tipped forward for the noose to like kind of go around her, catch her and drop her. And I thought that was beautifully executed. But what then you're completely taken out of it again when you see the friend on the floor with the worst makeup job I've ever seen in my life.
She was still breathing, by the way.
Her eyes were moving.
I mean, the beautiful window, ceiling window light.
Oh, God, yeah.
Obviously, she fell through that, and then that's how she hung. She hung herself. She didn't hang herself. It was something else. But and then her mate ended up dead on the floor because her mate didn't want to step out of the way. She just stood there and went, you know, just move in 2 inches to the left like anybody can.
Gash right in the face.
Pretty much.
It looked awful.
Yeah, no, it did.
Oh my God, that makeup job looked absolutely terrible.
It was shocking.
But yeah.
But it set the scene. You thought to yourself, right, okay, here we are. We've got lots of blood. I don't know why we're here, but right, okay, this is where we are, you know.
The choice of the blood is interesting. It's very watery. It's a lot. And it goes with every bit of red that is used in any form of clothing, architecture. It's exactly the same colour. The architecture in this movie is fucking beautiful. Like, I don't believe places like this exist. This is like that. It's almost Hollywood, like old Hollywood sets.
Yeah, these are all buildings he found that, like I said, had kind of like Art Deco Bauhaus kind of vibe to them. Because he could manipulate the color through lighting. He could do things with it that
he's got an eye. I'll give a gentle that he's definitely got an eye.
He could walk in and it could be a white canvas. You know, it could look the way it looks, but all the walls are white. You know, and very sort of plain. And he went in with like massive gobos on the lighting systems to just completely red out a room. You know, he did a lot of things through clever lighting and obviously turning up the contrast when they put it through the three stripe machine. But yeah, he saw things differently.
Yeah,
this movie compared to the second one is very color heavy. The second one is based in winter, so it's very muted, which I think takes the spirit of the film away a little bit.
I didn't mind the palette of that one.
I
didn't
don't mind it.
The grays and the darkness of it. I've just got other feelings on it. Oh, we'll get to it. I don't want to go off on one. So when after that bit happens, Susie then does make her way to the school to be taught, so to be introduced to the greatest the greatest duo I have ever come across in movie history. Miss Tanner and Madame Blanc. Madame Blanc played by Joan Bennett and Miss Tanner played by, now she's credited as Alda Valli, V-A-L-L-I. However, her stage name is Valli.
Right.
Valli, Miss Tanner, I think if you look at her, you'll go, oh God, she looks like something out of Heidi High. This woman is fucking royalty in movies.
Her eyes, she was incredibly expressive. It wasn't the fact that it wasn't a word she was saying. It wasn't anything like that. It wasn't her expressions. It wasn't her movement. It was her eyes. Like, they were so
piercing.
There, you know, they were massive as well. Like, they were like, they were all you saw on her face because there was nothing else there, just the eyes. And
she had a beautiful smile as well. And she knew this movie was going to be dubbed.
Right.
She knew that. The only person who isn't is Joan Bennett, and main star Jessica Harper. Mm-hmm. If they are, they're dubbed by their own voices. But she overemphasized every word to make sure the person, whoever was doing her voice, would be able to pick up what she was saying. So she spoke like that the whole way through. Amazing. She did it to, it was a purpose decision that she made. But yeah, she is royalty. The credits to her name are unreal. She equates to the likes of Marlene Dietrich. That's where she is in the caliber of movies. Not Hollywood, because she didn't go to Hollywood. She was an Italian film actress, and she's just amazing. Not as amazing as Joan Bennett. Joan Bennett is royalty, is Hollywood royalty, because she comes from a long lineage of Hollywood actors, to where she ended up marrying a producer and had one of the biggest Hollywood scandals that broke her career. This is the last movie she did.
Yeah.
I mean, she died in 1980.
Right, so 3 years after.
I think it was 1980. Because she saw 1986, I want to say, because she was in the midst of the 90s. Oh, was she in the midst of the 80s? Hold on, because it's quite important to the story when she died. 1990.
All right.
So the whole 80s had been. So the scandal, her husband, who was a big Hollywood person, was a very slightly jealous man. And she and her agent were walking. So her car was parked outside of a Hollywood backlot. He then drove past and saw her car and went, "Oh my God, there's Joan's car," and parked up near it. Not next to it, but near it. And he waited for Joan to come out. And he saw Joan and her agent coming out. And as they were about to get in the car, the agent put his hands on Joan's shoulders. He got out the car and shot him. Broad daylight, he shot him. This was in the midst of the 50s, 60s. This broke her career. He got locked up, claimed jealousy, you know, the whole crime of passion thing, yeah. He didn't serve a lot of time. The guy survived. He's a shit shot.
All right, good.
But yeah, and so this actually, she didn't work properly again after this scandal. She clawed her way back through television, but not through movies. This was the last movie that she ever did. I'm pointing to my laptop, like, you know what I'm pointing at. But yeah, this was, Suspiria was the last movie she did. She will always be grateful for Argento giving her that last hurrah. Yeah. But yeah, TV is where she had to go back to the stage. She literally had to start from the bottom and work her way up. And she only ever got back into television just before she did this. And she won. She proved why she is who she is, because she proved it with the amount of awards, television awards that she won for her parts. But yeah, nobody wanted her. Nobody touched her after that scandal. But what she said was, she did an interview in 1986 and said, "If this happened today, nobody would give two shits and I would be still working the movies."
Correct. Yeah, 100%.
But because it was the 50s.
When they originally wrote the screenplay for this, Dario and the other guy that I can't remember, you said his name earlier, they wrote the screenplay. And the problem was they wanted to use 12-year-old children.
Yes.
For the dancers and for the school. But even his dad said, because obviously if you've watched the original, you'll see his dad's, I think it's Sergio Argento.
Salvatore,
that's it. And it comes up at the beginning and his dad was like, "Hell no, you're pushing it too far."
So confused me at the beginning. I was like, "Hang on a minute."
Yeah.
Salvatore?
But he told them under no circumstances was he to use children. But they didn't do is they didn't change the dialogue. So when you're listening to them talk, it's written for children, hence why
makes the so much sense.
Original script isn't flowy, it isn't flowery, it is just very to the point.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, I didn't realize that the script hadn't changed.
Yeah. The other thing about it was when you went and you were talking about all the dubbing, a lot of them didn't speak English.
Yeah. So
what they did was they didn't have a sound man on set. Mm-mm. So they filmed the whole thing through the cameras and then they went in and they did their voiceovers afterwards. And they didn't always have, like you say, that the original person playing mm-hmm. the part.
It wasn't always the case. No, why she made sure her voice was emphasized.
But if you actually watch, there are some people who are speaking in German
yes.
or Italian or French, and they're being dubbed over in English.
Yes.
So the bit you will notice it the most at is where Susie goes to the college, the university, to speak to her friend. Who did you recognize her friend? The young guy who introduces her to the other older guy, the young friend at the university, is actually the head vampire from Blade. You know, the guy that Stefan Dorff takes him out.
What? The university.
It's him. Yeah. It's him.
Whoa.
I can't remember his name, so I do apologise. I didn't write it down. Usually I do, but I didn't.
Do you know, see, I've just realised, so I copy and paste a lot of my notes, and I've just realised when the majority of the cast is actually credited as the English-speaking person mm-hmm. rather than the actor.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So when you see him talking to the I can't think of what his name was, Mr. Milius or something like that. His name is weird.
Yeah, Milius, you're right.
Yeah,
Professor Milius.
She sat down with him and he's speaking whatever language it is to her. And for her to respond, he kept kicking her to tell her he'd finished his line so she could respond in English. And then she'd smile at him or she'd do a nod or something at the end of her sentence so that he knew to his reply. But when you watch it, they dub over it in English, but you can see he's blatantly not speaking.
Oh, there's a lot. Perfect. There's a lot. Yeah. Olga, the friend.
Yeah.
She's not speaking English at all.
No.
The lady who plays Susie, Jessica Harper, mm-hmm. Dario Argento, really, really wanted her. Really wanted her. And he was fighting for her voice not to be dubbed over. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to make sure she was as clear as a bell, so yeah. It didn't have to be. Jessica Harper turned down a huge movie for this.
Mm-hmm.
A huge, huge movie that could have completely put her career in. Don't get me wrong. Jessica Harper did not do bad in life. She married a Sony executive who fucking runs Sony. So she's doing okay. But she turned down. What did she turn down, Dan? I can't remember.
Annie
Hall.
That's it.
She turned down Annie Hall for this.
And Jessica Harper, he picked her for two reasons. One, he said she had the biggest eyes he'd ever seen, beautiful. Naturally. And he was just drawn to, like, even when she was scared, they got bigger, and that's what he liked. He didn't have to mm-hmm. force it out of her because it was a natural thing. And the second reason was because they've actually dubbed him the Italian. And I don't like this. Hitchcock. They dubbed him the Italian Alfred Hitchcock because he'd become quite involved with the female stars. Not in the sense of, from what I can gather, I haven't seen anything that suggests.
I did not read anything to say that anyone has.
The same weird world as him. But from the perspective of that, he gets very involved with his leading ladies. Like, he wants them to perform a certain way. He has to have them look a certain way. He has a list kind of thing, like Hitchcock's used to. But as far as I know, he doesn't get to the point of where he's throwing birds in their faces and trying to tip them up outside the back of a fucking scene. But yeah, no.
Nah. I didn't read anything of that nature. Just that he was more involved with the performance. I don't know if it's an art thing. This movie's very artsy.
Yeah, that's the whole thing about giallo movies. They are incredibly art housey.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's blatant nudity. That's why there's all this sort of stuff, because you're just supposed to go, oh, well, it's just
freedom. Yeah, it's completely, completely freedom. So she's joined this dance school. Miss Tanner is her teacher. Madame Blanc. Oh, the clothes that that woman wore were amazing. Did not fit the room at all. I'm devastated because the loss of a student has happened. They found out that she's dead. Mm-hmm. They don't look devastated, in all honesty. But she starts. Susie realizes that she remembers something that she said before, because she saw the dead student. Pat, mm-hmm. was it?
Patricia.
She saw her leaving in a frenzy and heard her say two words, but she kind of keeps them to herself for a bit. She doesn't drop that bombshell until later. Poor. Yeah. But yeah, you don't really see what I liked about the second one is that you actually got to see them dance. In this one, I got to see everyone else dance, but not Susie.
No, and considering she spent so long learning how to become a ballet dancer for this part, you see Susie on her toes for about 10 seconds before she flakes out on the floor.
Yeah.
And I was just like, she studied how long for this? Because when you look into it, I don't know whether it's method acting. I don't know whether they thought that they would have a bigger part. I don't know whether you saw more in a cut scene of her dancing, but really there's very little dancing in the first one. The second one is full of it. It's all about the dance.
All about.
But this one, it's a little bit disappointing because I think I would have liked to have seen some actual ballet dancing. I think it would have helped. I don't know. I think it just would have helped a little bit more pull the school idea
together.
There wasn't much foundation about that other than... No.
It was a school.
Yeah, and then she borrowed somebody's shoes and she tried to sell her shoes and she didn't want her shoes.
What is it with the money?
They kept turning around going, at each other. And I was like, what the hell is this?
What is going on? When she goes to the school, she's told that her room is not ready yet and she has to go for $50 American. She can go and stay with someone from the school. Which she ends up doing. Now, this is what confused the life out of me. This is another bit where I feel like I blinked and missed something. So she went and stayed with the girl and she came back to the school and we never saw the girl again. She's never back in the school at all.
No, I don't think so. And I don't remember her being anywhere else at the end either.
She's not seen at all, not heard of, not spoke of. It's like she didn't exist at all. Because when Sarah, something happens in the school how does she end up back in the school?
She comes to get her to take her back, doesn't she? Or something.
No, that's it. She has that. That's when she has that unsettling feeling, and that's when she ends up passing out. And she gets put into the room she was meant to have because she wasn't going to go back to stay in the school. And they end up basically keeping her there for her to recover. And that's how she ends up back in the school. And you never find out about this roommate at all.
Yeah, and they're slowly poisoning her, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. They're keeping her on a bland diet with red wine.
Yeah, well, you're not really sure what they're doing to the food, but they're doing something.
They're doing something. It's something to keep her there, basically, is to keep her, I want to say a week, because I don't know if there's anything else they could do to her at that time that we wouldn't see.
She then befriends that girl, doesn't she? The other American.
Sarah.
And that's when... the other American becomes quite nosy, shall we say. And this is the culmination of the second death scene, if I'm right, isn't it? Which I do not understand for love nor money. Many, many reasons this one flummoxed me. I understand visually it's an amazing thing to look at, you know, the blue lighting, the reflecting off all the silver. But why have you got a room full?
Yeah.
I mean, for those of you who don't know, she runs around and the colours change to blue in this kit. And she's running around trying to escape something. You don't see what it is, but she's trying to escape it. She climbs through a window, but ends up in, I don't know whether she goes through the window to get into the barbed wire room, but somehow she ends up in this room of barbed wire. Bear in mind, it's not barbed wire. It is just wire. It is just rolls and rolls of plain wire. But
there is a wire.
Barbed wire room, right? There's no razors on it. There's no barbs on it. There is nothing on it whatsoever. It's just plain wire.
And she's just flailing around on it and dying and everything. Before all that happens, it's the reason I'm itching for is because the most horrible scene in the whole thing is the maggots falling from the ceiling.
Yes.
Fuck that for what it's worth.
Well, the falling from the ceiling was actually rice. The ones falling from the ceiling was rice, except for on that one person, which I think was...
It's one
of the girls come out and she had them all wriggling on her face, didn't she? I can't remember which girl it was, but one of the girls come out and then you see her sort of batting them off. The bit where Miss Tanner walks out, that is actually rice falling on her when she starts batting it off.
Two things in this world I don't do. I don't mind spiders. I'm quite scared of anything that flaps in front of us. But two things that it makes us sick. It makes us, I'm itching really badly. Maggots is one of them. Hate the fuckers. And ants. I fucking hate ants. Didn't realise that I had an ant phobia until we had an ant issue in the house. And fucking hate them. I hate them. I hate them. Don't like them. I've got in one cupboard, which is very far away from my cats because it is pure poison, is an ant thing, just in case the fuckers ever come back. I hate them, Dan. I hate them. Oh, and they make us feel itchy as anything. Oh, I can handle most things, but not that. And when they start, it was when it was in our brush.
Yeah. Oh, so they moved everybody downstairs, didn't they, into the, like, food room. Yeah. She said, oh, it only affected people on the top floor or something. And they went up and looked in the loft and there was nothing in there that I could see, if I remember rightly.
And this is where you get some explanation as to the creepy things that are going on. So as the two girls are going to sleep, behind them and the curtain, an old lady lies down and kind of growling and snoring. And that is the original OG witch.
Eleanor Marcos.
Yes.
Who, by the way, was reportedly a 90-year-old former sex worker who Dario Argento spotted on the streets of Rome. Well, yes. I have to say, bravo, because...
Yeah.
It was creepy as fuck.
It was creepy as fuck. But yeah, you find out she's the main head witch. So basically, this film is about witches and a coven.
Yeah.
If you wanted to know what Suspiria is really about, it's about witches in a coven who particularly don't like their students.
Well, I feel like, now, I don't know if I'm right here, but I read between the lines and it feels like they have to sacrifice their students to be able to keep going.
It's like a youth thing, isn't it? It's the typical trope of a witch is that you need to take from the youth in order to keep. It's Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, I was going to say. Black flame candle.
Yeah, exactly. But they are doing it by killing. It's sacrificial. They just don't really go into the whole sacrificial thing. You never see anyone. You hear them talking about it. Mm. But you never actually see that side of it. And I felt like I knew where he was going with this because at the time of the 70s, there was a lot of movies of this nature.
Satanic where,
yeah, exactly. So, but when it wasn't being explained, I was like, oh, just a bit more, just a little bit more. And you would have been fully, fully there. Because I'm going to put this out there. I really enjoyed this movie. Mm. I actually really enjoyed this. More than what I ever thought I was going to. I was getting a bit sick of having to turn my telly up and down all the time. I got to admit, that was a bit annoying. But the characters in it, the ending was, it was so of its time.
Just,
I loved it. But I also know that I remember when I first watched Demons and I went on a fucking a roller coaster of a ride with that movie. I was all over the place to the point where at the end, when they're leaving the building and they're in the car and I'm like, it's over. And as the credits are rolling up, I'm like gearing myself up to go make a cup of tea or something. And then all of a sudden I just hear gunshots and it's not fucking over. It's still going on. And I'm like, holy shit. And then it just ends. I thought this was going to happen there as well. So I kind of waited through the credits. Nothing happens. Yeah. But it's perfect how she just walks away from it all. The house is up in flames and it's the smile. It's like,
you did. But it's so bizarre. You don't really understand what the hell's going on.
No.
You have a friend and a newfound friend. She falls into the barbed wire room. she gets pinched to death or whatever the bleeding hell happens in there, and all of a sudden she's dead. So they then ransack the room and make it out like she's done a midnight flip, right? Yeah. And they try and tell Susie, oh yeah, that's what's happened. Then Susie's suspicions are really, really up. She's like, she wouldn't do that. I don't really know.
And then she turns into Batman.
And then she goes and sees those people at the uni. She has that conversation that we talked about. And then she comes back. But then she does this weird thing. Someone gives her a bit of paper. I can't work out. I can't remember how she got these instructions. But it's when she's creeping through the...
It's Sarah.
Right, it was Sarah.
Sarah left a note for her. And it's to listen to where they're actually going. See, they say they don't stay in the house. But they never leave.
Yeah.
And it's where are they going to? And the creepy little nephew.
Oh, yeah.
Why is he there?
Just to be creepy kid, I reckon.
It's like he saw Village of the Damned and went, yes.
We'll have one children. Of
those. Yeah, we'll take one of them. that's when she becomes Batman. She becomes the detective because she starts listening to them to see if they're actually all leaving the house. And that's when she goes, if the steps were going this way, they'd be going out, but they're not, they're going that. And that's when she follows them and sees Madame Blanc doing that amazing. She's got to die.
The American one has to go.
He has to go.
And then she bumps into the body of her friend, Sarah, who's all tied and like pinned with great big like nails to this board, if I remember rightly. And then
that is correct.
The Frankenstein Lurch fella is like, he's just their manservant he's like their familiar from what I can work out. And he like, you think he spotted her, but she backs into a room, doesn't she, to try and get away. And this is where she comes face to face with Helena Marcos, who's the original woman who runs the dance
sport,
who is technically the coven. She's the main witch, the head witch.
She's the head witch. And if you kill the head witch, all of the witches die. Nothing really happens. And just to break this a second, my mother has just texted me, which is very unlike my mother at this time of night because she's normally abed by 8:30. The Northern Lights are above my house. She's just sent us a picture and it's literally the Northern Lights are literally above my house right now. She'll be buzzing her tits off. The last time it happened was a few months back and it was huge. It was massive. Like the whole of my outside was just purple and greens and all. It was beautiful. And she slept through the whole thing. But bearing in mind, a month before that, she paid to go to Iceland to see them there.
See, where we are, we have to pay to go to Iceland to see them because they're never here. You know, we don't
above
get
my
them.
House right now. Shut up. Sorry to break that up.
That's okay. I mean, Helena didn't really have much to say on the subject. You just hear this wheezy old crone in the back of the room, like trying to breathe. And then all of a sudden you hear is Susie Banion or something along those lines. I knew it would be you. And then I don't even know how it happened, but like Susie slits her throat somehow and that's it. We're done. She nearly decapitates her. And then all the witches set on fire and she walks out, really.
That's it. Yeah. That really is it. It's not the great, honestly, when it comes down to plot and such like that, it's not the greatest of films. I will admit that. However, I did come out of it and go, you know, I could see what he was trying to do. And we don't know how much is missing. We there was nothing explained as to, and there's nothing that I've found to say what was actually missing, as in for story and plot line. But I didn't mind it. I can't say I didn't not like it because it was all right.
It didn't go down too well in the box office. Let's put it that way. It made 1.8 million in 1977, which I didn't do the conversion on. So it's probably around 15 million today's, maybe 20 million today's money. But I couldn't find what the budgetary, you know, thing
was.
So I don't know how much it cost to make. So I don't know whether 1.8 was a success or not, but I'm guessing it was. It was actually rinsed in the by people reviewing the movie. One of the guys praised the visual style. He said the film's visuals were absolutely stunning, but he didn't like the way that Susie played too demure, too mindful. Very demure. very,
very mindful. Very mindful.
He didn't like the way she was like that, and he also said he called it a weak imitation of The Exorcist.
No.
I don't know how he got there from that, but I can see the whole supernatural thing. The Exorcist came out, what, 3 years before that, 4 years before that? So you're still in that weird supernatural horror.
Yeah, well,
kind of loop, maybe.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm going to come back to that later because, yeah, and you'll understand why. Apparently, this had a high kill count.
Right.
I'd love to know what their definition of a high kill count is, because what they said, considering it's a short film,
yeah,
there's four deaths in it.
Right.
Right. No, hang on. 12 in total. Sorry. Right. 12 in total. Do they not know what Claude Rains did in one film? With less not. Time.
Clearly not. And even with in the second time. One, there's more of a kill count. In the second one, there's 14. Now, bearing in mind, the second one, I don't want to call it a remake.
It's not a remake.
Or a reboot. For me, this is a reimagining because
it's inspired.
Totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different to the point of where Dario actually lost his shit when he was asked a question about it.
Yeah.
He said, either you do it exactly the same way, in which case it's not a remake, it's a copy, which is pointless. Mm. Or you change things and make another movie. In that case, why call it Suspiria? He said it was really absurd that he was never asked about anything concerning the remake. Nobody asked him about casting, locations, or anything. Yet they still gave him an executive producer title or something like that along the lines of.
They did.
He was not particularly enamored by the second one.
They put his name into it. Yeah. For rightly or wrongly reasons, they did it. Full disclosure, turned this movie off. It's 2.5 fucking hours for to start with. I think I got an hour and a bit in. It was Mia Goth's. Yeah. And I just went, I can't fucking take this no more.
Why did you do Mia Goth's voice? She speaks incredibly well, but it's very high-pitched. Jamesy. And I can't stand it, frankly. That's what puts me off listening to Mia Goth, however you say her fucking name, because it's so high-pitched. I find it very over the top sometimes, too.
It's like the one thing I didn't fucking mind.
I can't bear it. I tell you what, it was Infinity Pool that did it for me. If I hadn't have seen Infinity Pool, I think I could stand Mia Goth. The character she plays in that, where she's walking... Alexander Sarsgaard round on a dog lead, and she goes, Jamesy, that's all you hear, and it's like, shut up, I want to, oh, and then my brain was like, how the hell does Shia LaBeouf put up with her, but then I think, oh, how the hell does
she put up with Shia LaBeouf, yeah, it works both ways. Yeah. I can't get away with Pearl, I loved because they're not her. It's like, fuck all to do with her. It was the setting of it. It was the fact that we were going back into an era that, you know, you didn't think you were going to see again. It was very Texas Chainsaw. It was beautifully shot. Brittany Snow was in it. She just happened to be there. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And what's that face? In Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah. General Ortega.
General Ortega's in it, yeah. And then Pearl. And I just... the most unwatchable film I've ever done. It's terrible. And then I watched X, and I just thought, this is not a good character to do a full trilogy on. She's not a good character.
Yeah. A lot of people love it, and
I haven't
seen Maxine yet, so I don't know.
Maxine, that's the one. That's it.
I haven't seen that yet, so I can't really comment on that. Pearl, I didn't really get on with, but I liked the original X. I thought that was. That should have been a one and done as it was, but you know, people like to milk shit.
Yeah, and they milk.
As we found out.
As we see with this. There's a few things I loved off the bat, especially with the cast, which kind of confuses. I didn't know who was who because I thought Tilda Swinton was Miss Tanner.
No.
But she's not. She's Madame Blanc.
She's Madame Blanc, and she's also the German guy. The little old German man, that's Tilda Swinton.
What the fuck?
And she also plays Helena Marcos at the end.
What the fuck?
That's what we're talking. This is why this film is a lot cleverer than people give it credit for. Because They didn't tell anyone that was Tilda Swinton playing the old German guy.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't tell a single fucking person. And they were going to kill him off before the premiere, hence why he didn't turn up for the premiere. But then they thought that was taking it too far. So then they released the information that Tilda Swinton played three characters in this film.
That's crazy. That's
the makeup level for the older guy. There's a scene which is near the end where she's fully naked as the guy. She has a penis and everything. Like, they went to town. She insisted they gave her one because it made her feel more like the role, the manly role. And you know, anybody that knows anything Tilda Swinton, I expect she's incredibly Stanislavski method. She's very much like in the film. She's gonna do it. She's all in. Dakota Johnson, Mia Goth, and Chloe Grace Moretz, I always forget her surname. All three of those are in it as well.
So. Dakota Johnson. Fuck me, she looked phenomenal in this. I'm not a huge fan of hers whatsoever, but she looked, that hair, the hair, the bony body, because of the fact he's a dancer, it works for her. And the fact you get to see, there are some beautiful movements in this. Stunning.
The opening confuses me every time I see this one.
Yeah, I get that.
There's two, like, it opens to Chloe Grace going in to see the psychiatrist, which just so happens to be the old guy that is Tilda Swinton. And she's absolutely batshit insane, Chloe. And she's harping on about all this, that, and the other. And she's sort of setting the scene for the fact that she outs them all as witches at that point. So you're like, right, okay, we're going with the exposition from the start. We're not waiting till the end like we did in the other film. But she gives crazy across really, really well. So you're like, I don't know how much of this I'm believing, but she put the seed of thought into the psychiatrist's head at that point then, because he starts like wanting to look into everything after she disappears, never to be seen again until the end of the movie. Patricia, her name was. She was the original girl that goes missing. Then it switches on a dime to a bunch of Mormons. They're Mennonites. They're not Mormons. My bad. Okay. There's very, very different factions of many different kind of people who churn their own butter.
Saw their own sheets.
Wax their own candles, you know. That sort of stuff. You know, these modern types.
Yeah.
And Ohio. So remind me not to go to Ohio.
You'll not be welcome.
Because she's cast as a rebel because she used to run away and go and watch these like big stage shows when she was younger, because all she ever wanted to do was to dance. But she was supposed to be a good Mennonite woman and look after her mother, and her mother died. And then I think that gave her the inspiration to just up and leave. And so she just, from what I can gather, she just turned up on their doorstep to audition. I don't know whether she actually got a letter to audition or she just was bare fronting, like.
Yeah, because it's made clear in the original that she was very much invited there.
Yes.
But in this one, she just, hey, I'm here. But she knows that shit.
Yeah, I mean, basically, from what I can gather, dancing at this place is very much like a bewitching, it's like a spell casting, the dancing. It's like a form of magic in itself. Every move has a meaning, which when you're someone who has studied and done their A-levels in performative dance, I've done a BTEC too, because, you know, A-levels just aren't enough. Yeah, I know. What are you doing? I'm a spoon.
I'm a tree.
Honestly, that's what we have to do. Roll on the floor, do a couple of funny shapes.
Oh my God, you thought it was rolling on the floor?
Lots of that. And you know, I'm not belittling what people do, because they put a lot of time and effort into this kind of dance. But, you know, it is very, very hard, because every move has a meaning. You are translating words through movement, and it's really freaking difficult to understand unless you're in that world. So
That kind of comes into play later. That's a very good description of what happens later on.
Yeah, I mean, you see her audition, and basically she wipes the floor, and all of the women that are in that have really been taking the piss out of her, like, oh, you shouldn't really be here. I don't know why you're here, but you know, you're not going to do very well. We're not going to let you have any music. You've got to do it all by yourself. But she's that good that Madame Blanc is in the other room and she senses her dancing. So she comes in the room to watch her dance. Now, this room is just a room with nothing but mirrors all the way around. It's a horrible room. Horrible room.
It's very reminiscent of the room in Flashdance.
Yes.
Apart from it's not mirrors, it was windows in that.
Yeah, this one's just very... there's something uncomfortable about it. It's not a nice room to be in.
I was waiting for Jerry Halliwell to pop out somewhere and start singing It's Raining Men at one point. It was just the shape of it. It was just the shape. No, I wasn't so much concentrating on the windows and the exterior, just the shape looked exactly. And I tell you what I do not like is the sound of feet on bare wood gloss floor. It's horrible. Yeah. Don't like it. But that's just my nitpicky.
Well, in this one, in the old one, we had Goblin do the soundtrack for it. In this one, we had Tom York from Radiohead. He did the entire soundtrack.
Very different.
Just a little bit. He had to be coaxed into this, though, because he didn't really initially want to do it. He was just like, oh, well, not really, you know, but they sort of talked him into it. And if you actually watch this, there's hardly any music in it.
No, not from what the thing is, though, if you're comparing it against the original, when it comes to the music, it's always going to be night and day. The best part about Goblin is that they didn't just use instruments. It was their voices. Gonna get you. I'm gonna make myself cough.
Yeah, that's why what they were trying to do was interpret that and use it in this film by when they weren't using music, when they were dancing, it was the breathing and the chest banging and it sounded like they were hyperventilating half the time because
it did. You heard they wanted everything. To use
that. They wanted to use that as the rhythm base, basically.
I get that. I get that because you literally heard everything, every breath, every. It's like when I do yoga and I can hear my instructor breathing.
Oh no!
Yeah,
it's fine, yeah.
Don't like it. It infuriates us. I'm like, shut the fuck up! It's meant to be a meditative time. I don't need to hear you go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, when they first got, I thought, oh good. She's finished dancing now, you know, we don't have to listen to that anymore. But she got put off by seeing Tilda Swinton in the corner. And then she was like, well, gooey over Tilda Swinton. I've seen you do this show, you know, I've been a physical.
Oh, that's right, because she proper kisses ass, doesn't she? She's like, when she goes, you've not seen this dance. We've been doing this for 4 years. And you think just from a viewing that you can do this? And she's like, I saw you perform this dance at such and such. Mm. And then she does it and it's like, okay, bitch.
And everybody's like, and you can see they're all like looking at each other as if to say, wow, she really does know this. But when she's doing this dance, at this point, she's just moved in. The side story is very similar to the original, as in she's there, she's staying in the house, but the acts aren't the same. There's not enough, the things that happen aren't the same.
The best part about this film is straight away in the opening bit, it actually explains to you what the issue is, whether it be... No, sorry. Something's just totally distracted us. I'm sure I've just seen something go here and my cats aren't in the room with us. I freaked us out a bit, sorry. That was it. In the doctor's room, she tells them straight, there's a coven, it's witches, witchcraft, supernatural. So you know straight away that something's a bit off, which is something they never did in the original. You had to kind of figure that out for your fucking self.
Yeah. The first didn't have any exposition at all. This one, it was straight off the bat. It's like, yeah, here we go. But the dance scene where she's giving it all the, I can do it, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, this dance is principle. This is a big freaking deal. I don't know if you can, which is a fair assumption. She's been there a day and she thinks she can dance the main lead in their production of Volk or whatever it was that she performed years before and all this sort of thing. So when she's performing it, she starts to, and she tells her to sit down and start, take a deep breath and start again. And in doing so, just before this happens, Olga has a hissy fit and basically breaks down. And she's like, fuck you all, you're all a bunch of witches, I've had enough. And she goes running away.
Fuck's my little finger doing when I did that there.
She runs away. Anyway, somehow, I'm not sure how, but she ends up in the mirror room where...
It's like she's forced in there. It's yeah. Like almost like she's like drawn to it. She has to go into it because there's no explanation as to why she ends up there.
But the woman who plays Olga, her name was Elena Fokina. She actually was a trained contortionist. The whole scene is her doing those positions genuinely by herself. There was no CGI used in that scene. I did keep checking and they all said no, like every bit of information I found said no. The dance that Susie's doing ends up affecting Olga to the point of, with every movement, Olga ends up getting hurt. Like her ribs are broken. Her face is contorted.
Her ribs are not just broken. Ribs are literally twisted around her body.
Yeah, she's like got the back of a rib cage at her front. At one point, her arm is stuck behind her back to the point of where it's dislocated and it's round. And then the bit I did like, right? And I don't mean I liked it, but I thought it was a really good thing because you don't get this because it's something that people always go, oh, that's taking it a little far. I'm not going to do that. She wets herself.
Yeah. It's a normal reaction.
What your body would do if it was under such stress that you can't control anything.
Absolutely.
She's petrified.
I almost wet myself when I'm going to sneeze. These things happen. Think about it. All she is muscle.
Yeah.
And muscle contracting.
She's been thrown all over the place. And when they find her, she's like a human pretzel at the end.
This is one of my favorite bits of this whole film.
It is this bit. So well done, that bit.
I don't want to use the word beautiful because I feel that it's wrong, but it is at the same. It's the fact that they managed to, it's the weird shot.
Yeah.
That every movement you see her do is afflicted onto Olga, and it is just so beautifully timed that I couldn't take my eyes off it. Even though what was happening to her was horrific, I still couldn't. And the makeup work that they did and any effects that they used looked completely natural. Mm-hmm. It was the one thing that kind of gripped us. My only issue with this film, and the reason I turned it off was because it was getting too much. It was just getting far too much. And I was like, no, I can't do this anymore. It's almost like it's trying to be smart for smart's sake.
Yeah, that is exactly what someone said. This is a dumb version. This is a dumb movie for smart people.
Mm-hmm.
So
look at how big and clever we are. That's how it felt. And I was like, well, I'm not fucking putting up with this anymore.
There was too much, the side story in respect of that Susie goes to a school and it turns out they're witches, like in the first one. That is there, right?
Yeah.
But there is a lot more to the story than just that in the second one. There's a whole revolutionary thing going off. There's bombs being dropped. There's all sorts of things. And it turns out that the witches are also a front for some sort of... terrorist group as well, which is only alluded to a little bit, and they sort of then sweep past it. It's like, it's an unnecessary part of the story. You do not need to know any of those things. Mia Goth plays the Sarah character, and Sarah obviously is in the first one, it's the one that ends up in the razor wire. In this, nothing happens to Sarah till the penultimate end, which I'll tell you about when we get there, but there's not really much more to say. The kills are really, that kill is the most
horrific
thing you can see done to somebody's body, but it is one of those things that when you watch it with the dance and they keep flitting backwards and forwards, there's something very, very clever about it. And you see so many horror films, you see so many deaths. And I love a death someone's put thought into. I like it when they take something and they think outside the box and they make it unlike anything you've seen at that point, you know.
Clever.
Yeah, we're not just talking about a creepy contortionist that can just, you know, like the jangly man in stories. Yeah. to Told in the Dark or whatever that one was. The Jangly Man, the guy who does that, Troy something, he is a contortionist by Olivia. That's what he does.
No, that's a voice actor. Never mind.
Yeah. But yeah, he's a contortionist for Contortionist State, where she was an actress, it was a contortionist that was an actress, and she was able to pull this off. And I just think that was an absolute amazing death scene.
It was an amazing performance.
Which was wasted in a film that no one's seen. So.
But not from just her, but from Dakota Johnson as well. How she moves about in there is just, it's beautiful. It's fluent, and it works wonderful with the transition over into Olga. Honestly, you kind of take your eyes off it, and it's disgusting what's happening to her. Yeah. It's horrible. It's the worst, but at the same time, you're like, oh, look at that.
I mean, somewhere along the line, then we get into all this exposition about witches, and the German doctor is basically, we get a lot more about him. Now, he lost his wife during the war. Now, this is supposed to be set in 77, which was when the original one came out. So this is what they were trying to allude to.
Okay.
Because it's Berlin, there was still a lot of
conflict.
And they were reflecting backwards and forwards because they were right next to the wall. So they were talking about, like, the German, obviously, World War II. So there's a lot of fixation on that from the Tilda Swinton German guy character. Now, it turns out that he was married to a woman called Ankh, and Ankh was actually played by Jessica Harper.
Yes.
So she came back into this movie, which I thought was nice, because
it's a nice touch.
They found a place for her.
Yeah, and it's nice to honour her.
Yeah, and I thought that was really clever. But to go into all the tiny minutiae of this film, of all the subplots and plots and plots and plots, basically, I'll skip straight to the end because you haven't seen it and it'll help explain everything. They go to a point where they're going to do their main performance. And you have the German doctor in the audience. You've got Madame Blanc to one side. She, Miss Tanner, they're all there waiting for the girls to do this dance. Now, Sarah is nowhere to be found. She's somewhere in the back. And all you hear is this almighty scream. And somehow, and I think it was one of the witches that did it, but I can't really remember this bit, her shin bone goes through her leg. Mia Goth, and you see it sticking out. She is screaming and screaming. And the witches basically come up to find her, and then they heal her leg. They literally run their hand over her leg and it's healed. And then they send her out to do the dance. And they do this dance. And then everything was going, like, they're in this pattern that was in the book of that Grace was had. And it's all very sort of like coming together at this point. And all of a sudden, I don't know whether it's like the spell breaks or the illusion breaks on Mia Goth, but her leg goes in the middle and she goes down like a sack of shit, and the dance has to stop. And they are so angry, the witches, that the dance had to stop, because obviously the dance had a lot to do with summoning something, or it was getting a, like, some sort of ritual, part of the ritual that they needed for the sacrifice, which is the next part. So this is the bit that I really loved about this film, which is the bit you missed. A long way forward. Like I said to you, it's an incredibly slow movie, but that last sort of 45 minutes, hour is really great. It's for
probably
me.
Probably around about the time I turned it off as well.
You Damn see it. Her, yeah, she finds her way down into this basement. And in the basement, you have Madame Blanc, obviously Tilda Swinton as herself. And then you've got her as Helena, which is just this gelatinous old lady. She looks like one of the Cenobites. They make her look like a Cenobite. Like, nice. You know, Butterball, is it, with the tiny little...
Yeah, the tiny little legs.
That's what she reminded me of, like a wig. And she was all just skin, and she was overweight, and it was all like a Sharpei dog, and she was all slimy. And she wasn't crusty like the original one. She was slimy and thingy. But Miss Tanner just kept constantly stroking her head like she was a dog. It was something very unsettling about that. And they kidnapped the old German guy, Tilda Swinton, and put him on the plinth to witness the whole thing. So he was going to be either a witness or a sacrifice. You don't really find out what he was supposed to be. And then as Dakota, Susie's walking down the stairs, you see all the other girls, and they're all doing this sort of like continuous, like euphoric dancing, where they're stuck in loops, repeating the same like moves over and over again. And there's a bit of dialogue, and they're sort of like, oh, I'm the, you know, Helena turns around and says, I'm the mother, I'm Madame Supreme. Oh God, what is it? She claims to be Supreme. Oh, fuck. What was it called? Sorry.
I know it. It's
Mother.
Mother Suspiriorum.
That's it. She claims to be Mother Suspirium. And she's saying, I want my children, they need to sacrifice for me because I need to get younger. I need to become one again. And basically, right. You look down and you see Mia Goth, you see Chloe Grace, and then you see the third girl. The third girl, that her death is really passed over quite quickly. She was the one who was jumping and then all of a sudden had a fit for no reason. And then she's moved out of the way really quickly. But the three of them are standing back to back in this kind of weird triangle. You've got all the witches, the school teacher witches, all sort of positioned around, and you've got the girls doing this ritual dance over and over again. And as Dakota Johnson's walking downstairs, she stops and she's trying to take everything in. And then she starts going on, Helena, about how she's the mother and she's this and she's that. And all of a sudden, Susie looks at her and she goes, why are you lying? Why are you telling lies? You're not the mother. And turns out Susie's the mother. She's Mother Suspirium, yeah. And she opens up her chest and there's a big black heart. And when she opens it up, just before then, Helena karate chops like in the air, through the air like that, and she cuts the back of Tilda Swinton's head off, Madame Blanc, and her head's hanging down like this and she's on her knees. So you think she's a goner, that's it, she's done. But they accused her of falling in love with Susie, but now we know why she was, because she's mother. So Susie was mother, but they don't tell you whether she was mother all along or she was mother since she got there, but she's mother. So she completely goes haywire. She goes psycho. She blows up all the witches that she felt were disrespectful or had something to do with the lie of Marcos being the true mother. So she blows up all the witches' heads, like they go poof, poof, and this whole room is just covered in claret by the end of it. And she goes up to the three girls, and Mia Goth at this point, she's been drawn and all of her intestines are on the floor. There you are. Got no volume. Still can't hear you. No. Yeah, you. Nothing. I don't know what's happening. I can't hear you. Just went. We can always cut it and then record the last little bit again if you want to.
Why is my mic not working?
There you are. There you are. You just come back.
My mic's working.
Yeah, just a second, come back.
Zoom totally freaked out.
Yeah.
It starts changing. It started like, looked like it was going to close itself down.
I could see you moving, but I couldn't hear a word you were saying. So.
Oh my gosh. I'll find the time out and I'll tell Paul when to cut.
What were you saying? Later.
What were you saying?
Basically, she made all the witches' heads explode at this point.
Yeah, I got that bit.
Yeah, the rooms are all covered in claret. And she goes down to Mia Goth and Chloe Grace and this third girl, and she says to them, what do you want? And they said to die. So she lets them all die, basically. She kills them, but she does. She just cradles them and lets them go. Because they're all being kept alive for the ritual. They're not actually alive. They're like, Chloe Grace is all moldy and like decomposed, but nothing's fallen off of her. But you can tell she's been dead for a while, kind of thing. And obviously, like I said, Mia Goth's been drawn, so she's not got any internals at this point.
Nice.
So she takes it out on them, and she starts going around, and she goes up to everybody, and she's looking around the room, and she's trying to work out who is a Mother Marcos believer. And when she works out who is who, she shuts her heart back up and she just walks out. Yeah, it's like, it's very bizarre at this point. Then next thing you know, you see the house mother, not Mrs. Tanner, the house mother, you know, the crazy blonde haired lady.
Yeah.
Take the German Tilda Swinton old guy out the door and starts walking him home. And he trots off to home and he gets in bed, you know, completely for schnickered. He hasn't got a clue what's going on. And he gets in his bed after he's had a shower and everything. And he's sitting there, started looking at, because they make him hallucinate to bring him to the thing. They make him hallucinate about his wife. And when he sat in the bed, he's reading like the Aryan journals from when they were in the war, him and his wife and all this sort of stuff. And next thing you know, Dakota, you know, Susie is sat on his bed and she's apologizing to him after all he's witnessed this whole
thing
in his butt nakedness. And I say butt nakedness, it's Tilda Swinton in a suit. But she apologizes to him and said, that's not, my children should not have done that to you. I cannot apologize enough. That's not what we're about. It's not what I'm about, you know, but you have to understand that there are things that I feel like I owe you. So I will give you the information about your wife that you so longly, you've been looking for so long. And basically she explains to him how his wife died, because he had no idea what happened to his wife during the war. She just technically vanished and he didn't know. So she informs him that she was, unfortunately, someone who was put in the gas chamber or died exposure. It gets a bit muddy just then talking about it. But she says to him, like, she comforts him. She says, you know, her last memory was of the time you took her to the concert, and that will, you know, when you went to see Mozart, that was her favorite memory. And she wasn't afraid when she died, because the last thing on her mind was you. And like she said, I owed you that for what happened, you know, so I'm giving you this as a gift. And she said, but I can't let you remember what happened. And she sort of erases his memory. He has a fit. And then she said to him, you know, you'll not remember anything after this. So she lets him have his moment, you know, with the joy of finding out, but then takes absolutely everything away from him. So his housekeeper comes in the room, witnesses the fit, tries to calm him down, and he just asks who she was. He doesn't have a clue who she is. So even his housekeeper memory, that's gone.
Oh my god.
And then it goes back to the school where they have a new teacher. I think, I don't know whether she's a new teacher or she's one of the old witches that was not a Marcus supporter, that didn't get blown up. And you see her teaching the girls that are left in the school, and she says something like, oh, unfortunately Miss Madame Blanc's gone away. But then it cuts to all the other witches trying to clean up all the blood, like with rags in the room, like trying to clean it up. And then you see Tilda Swinton on her knees with her head hanging forward, where she's been like partially decapitated, and the blonde witch pulls her head back up and reconnects her head, and Tilda Swinton's alive again. So every time she dropped her head, she died, and then she brought her head back up again. And it was like kind of like a snippet of like comedy relief. But you had to catch it. It was there. And then it just basically cuts out to Miss Tanner sitting upstairs, covered in blood, just shocked as hell, not knowing what the hell's going on. And it finishes. And then if you wait to the end credits, you just see Dakota just staring at the camera, and that's it. There's like an end credit scene, and it's pointless really, but she goes on to do whatever she's going to do as the mother. And I love that last 45 minutes, and I love the scene where you have the human pretzel. The rest of it can get to fuck, because it is absolutely irrelevant nonsense. Absolutely irrelevant nonsense. You know, it doesn't make
sense. You know, I wish you told us the ending. Just tell us what it was, and I would have watched it. Yeah. Because that sounds much more interesting than the shit show that I had to watch leading up to the point where I went, I can't fucking take this anymore. I dare to move.
If you decide you're gonna, just get it to a point where the dancing in the red string has finished, Mm-hmm. That's where it starts for me. Right. For me personally, that's where it's.
Well, it's going to be. It's, do you know, on the Fire Stick where it shows you Prime. Mm-hmm. And what you watch, like, it's going to be there for a long time. Yeah. So I might as well. I'll get it removed at some point.
But not surprisingly, this film absolutely bombed in the box office. It had a $20 million budget, but only made $7.8 million.
That's bad.
That is bad. So it was never seen by anybody, and Dario didn't really endorse it. It was not particularly well publicized. It was 2018, so it's not like we had a pandemic or any of that, and it's not that far away. So there was money for 20 million, there was money invested in it.
Yeah.
But the people that they have reportedly to play in this, so we're going to originally have Natalie Portman play the Susie character, but obviously mm-hmm. Natalie was coming out of Black Swan, so it would have been too similar.
That's too soon, yeah.
But also, instead of Tilda Swinton, they were going to originally have Judi Dench play Madame Blanc.
I can understand it.
But practically, it wouldn't
have. It wouldn't have worked.
No, I get it. But it wouldn't have.
Especially because if you're going to base it around Joan Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah, I totally understand that.
Like the matriarch kind of character.
Honestly, if you get bored one day, go down a rabbit hole with Joan Bennett and her family.
Yeah.
Because they are, oh my gosh, she comes from royalty. It's been a weird movie, but not something that I'm walking away from going, well, thank fuck that's over with.
Yeah.
Because I'm really happy that I watched the original and give it a chance, because honestly, the first time I couldn't get past the music. It was too uncomfortable.
Mm.
But this time I was like, I know I've got to get past it. Yeah. And when you do, it is a very beautiful movie.
Yeah, it's beautifully shot. The mm-hmm. colours are amazing. The dialogue lacks, but again, lost in translation, I think. The first movie I would definitely put, personal taste wise, at a 6 out of 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
Second one, the redeeming features of the human pretzel and the last 45 minutes put it at a 3 out of 10 for me, because the rest of it is dog shit.
Yeah.
So I think it could go up to a 4, but that's me being on a good day, catching me on a good day.
Yeah. Catch us on a good day, and I'll tell you that it's a 5.
It's the Tilda Swinton that takes it to a 3-4 for me. The Tilda Swinton in this movie. You would never have known it. She was the guy, the old German guy. You would never have known she was Helena.
Didn't have a Scooby-Doo. Mm-hmm. It's Tilda Swinton. Like, what else? I mean, I think it was Snowpiercer that kind of opened my eyes to, like, shit. Like, she will literally do anything.
Constantine.
I only watched that for the first time this year.
She does an amazing angel. Something stunning about her. She's so androgynous, and it works across the board for any character she plays, whether she's playing a female, a male,
the Sorcerer Supreme,
the White Witch in Narnia. You know, she covers faces. You know,
oh my gosh, how she looked then, the White Witch. She looked beautiful. Same cheekbones. You could literally cut glass on them.
Yeah.
Oh, she's absolutely.
I do apologize if she no longer identifies as a she, but as far as everything that I saw,
yeah,
had her down as a she. So if her pronouns have changed or people have not paid attention, I do apologize. That's not my intention. That is just what I've read. So I just want to leave that out there.
I mirror all that. let's put Suspiria to bed.
Bye.
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 That was easy. Yeah. And next week. And next week. It is a Vauxhall Nova. What? That's right. We are heading into one of the greatest films ever made, in my opinion. I can't say that because I can say that about a lot. We are doing one of my favourite films, though. We are going into The Omen. If anyone missed my appearance on the Let's Talk Horror podcast, I think that's what it's called. Sorry if it's not. I talked about The Omen. I didn't really get a chance to scratch the surface of, you know, what I know about this movie. So I can't wait to bore the shit out of it next week.
All right.
Yeah, The Omen. Original, remake if you wanna. We can talk about the one that came out this year. Anything to do with The Omen, we can talk about, apart from the fact that I've never seen the sequels.
I don't think the sequels are worth it, although Sam Neill does make me intrigued.
There is some bits I do know. There is some bits that I do know, especially with Damien's, you know, history of him growing up and that, but I never watched them. I might actually, I got nothing else better to do. I might actually watch them. So yes, next week is The Omen. This has been Suspiria. You can catch us on YouTube every Monday at 8 o'clock if you want to see these pretty faces. If you don't, you can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcast from, and all episodes from the Nerdy Up North team go up on a Tuesday. You can find the links for Bleeding Marvelous, Monsters Up North, Nerdy Up North, where, Dan?
Down there.
And on a personal note,
Beetlejuice says,
oh my goodness, look at them. People in the audio are not going to see Dan's amazing Beetlejuice nails.
Catherine and Winona.
Oh, just imagine waking up and say, oh, Catherine, you're there. On a personal note, massive congratulations to Dan and Bleeding Marvelous for their sponsorship of the Trader Halls. And for the love of horror, got announced last week.
It's been a long time coming. Yeah. Thank you. It's if you come to For the Love of Horror, which is probably the largest horror convention in the UK, you will see us, and I'm sure you see them lot as well. A lot of the nerdy guys are coming, and Sam.
Not Pond.
We're also selling these.
This
fella here.
You watch your arm. That's an awkward position.
This is...
He's been staring at me all night.
It's our officially licensed Terrifier bag. Damien Leone actually has a requested one from us as well. Oh. So this is how good it is. And also, he has his little glasses that attach to the bag. You can take them off and put them on.
That's so cool.
It's a backpack, if you prefer backpacks, but it's also a shoulder-mounted bag as well, and you have a selection of straps inside. But yeah, it's awesome. I absolutely love this bag, and I am going to flog the shit out of it. It is available on the website now if you want to go purchase. If not, we will have them at For the Love of Horror. Once they're gone, though. And we have a lot of them, but I don't know how many people want them. So either come early on Saturday or order now on the website, and you can collect it there whatever day you're coming, or I can send it out to you from the website. It's free postage on it as well, so... Yes, I just thought I'd get my little plug in. I don't plug often. So.
But she should. She should. And we're really, really proud of your sponsorship with For the Love of Horror.
And I also want to say a big thank you to Chris for shooting that glass of Wolfman Nards, which is our hot sauce that we've done with Dean of the Dead. I've never seen anyone do something so stupid in my entire life. But yeah, king of stupid, Chris, you impress me. You get the thumbs up for that one.
Well done, Chris. We will be back next week.
Yep.
So is there anything else left to say?
Bye.
She beat me to it. Stay spooky, everyone. Bye.